Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. We've got a great show for you tonight, great guest on this February the 10th on the West Coast, or if you are on the East Coast or in the Central Time Zone, then you know it is the early morning hour of February the 11th. Or 2-11. There we go. We've got an 11. Another one. They seem to be all over the place. And if you've read any of my research or even listened to some of the more recent talk about false flag events and things that are going around the world, then you'll notice that the number 11 is pretty significant to those that like to pull the strings. And we may talk about 11s tonight, but we are going to talk about something that is related to false flag events and other plans that the controllers have in mind. I'm going to again welcome to the show a good friend of mine. He is also my publisher and editor. He is the publisher, or I should say co-publisher, and co-founder of the Idaho Observer with Ingrid Castle, who unfortunately can't be with us tonight. However, the paper has been in circulation, in publication, now in their 12th year, and I've had the great fortune to have my writing career begin with the Idaho Observer, and when I'm not writing for the paper, I enjoy reading it. I encourage you to get a subscription, and we're going to talk about how you can do that with tonight's guest, Mr. Don Harkins. Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, well, good evening, Don. Hey, thanks for having me. Oh, and I do need to correct you, because each year is almost bought in blood that you're in the alternative or opposition publishing business. We have now begun our 13th year. January 1997 was the first year we or the first month we came off the press.
I see. Well, pardon me.
Well, you said 12 and it was 13, and I know it seems picky, but like I said, each one of those years, I swear, is bought in blood. So
okay.
we got to count each one.
All right. Well, the last
it's
time
kind
you
of
were
a
on
bad
the
courage too.
The last time you were on the show, I think you were in your 12th year. So
yeah,
so
we're
I stand
still in the 12th
correct.
Year. Yeah.
But all
we
right,
did.
Well,
it was actually January 1997 that the first edition came off the press. And I'll tell you, the comparative innocence with which we were researching and reporting what was going on in this country then as compared to now, well, it's almost no comparison. We live in a completely different country now.
Yes. Well, I happened to write for the paper the first time in January of 2007, so that would have been your 11th year then, if that's
yep.
correct. Okay.
That would be correct.
Well, it's too bad we don't have Ingrid with us, but we know that she's doing the dishes and mopping the floors and all, probably shoveling snow.
No, actually, what we have on the ground here is we had solid snow for the entire month of December. And now what we've had is just solid cold weather, and what we have now is 2 feet of this thick ice stuff that you can walk on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we had 3 feet of snow within the last couple of weeks. It's finally melted, believe it or not, and it's supposed to be in the 60s tomorrow, if you can imagine that. So maybe
wow.
Al Gore was right. Maybe global warming is creeping up on us. So.
Well, I think the global warming is a real issue when there isn't some global cooling going on. Global warming is definitely worse when it's when there's global curling, global cooling happening.
That's right. Okay, well, you got to listen to this show on a regular basis to understand that joke. So if you just joined us, keep tuning in, you'll figure it out. Don, there are a lot of things that you've been writing about. There's a lot of insanity that's been going on, and I know that there's something very close to the work that you and Ingrid do, and you've got a lot of news to share with us this evening regarding vaccinations and pandemics and all of that stuff, and I'm interested in what you're hearing on your end, being the publisher that you are.
Well, what it seems like is with each successive presidential administration, now this is going to sound funny, but Obama is my third president. You know, you've heard some of these D.C. press room pundits saying that, yes, I've worked under, you know, eight presidents or whatever, you know, and this is my third, and I haven't worked under them, and I haven't exactly reported the news as they would like, but I began under Clinton, lived or survived the Bush administration, and here we are in Obama. And with each successive administration, there's a completely different mood and environment. You know, it's shifting from the good cop to the bad cop, and I guess it's depending on perspective which one's which. But there's a definite mood swing, and with each new phase ushers in a whole new raft of totalitarian nonsense. And it just gets worse and worse, and it deals in one area during one administration and one area during another one, and pretty soon we're pretty well wrapped in this stuff. And one of the things that's happening now is that, I mean, in essence, this is a real generality here, but 8 years of Bush administration, pretty much beginning with 9/11, the emphasis was the war on terror and the horrors that we were exacting on various countries of the world, Iraq, Afghanistan in particular, and then, of course, what's always been going on in the Middle East with regard to Israel and Palestine that the U.S. is behind. So there's all this outward stuff and this corporatism and this cronyism and the good old boys club and, you know, all of that stuff. And even the first wave of, quote, bailout cash was given to whom? By the Bush administration. It was given to all the bankers and the corporate execs and the auto industry and that kind of thing. Well, now that we have Obama in office, which is really just a phenomenal reinvention of the Clintonistas, we see a much more domestic focus on what these guys are doing. And so a lot of this bogus bailout money is going to state agencies and domestic-type groups to boost their Marxist agendas or whatever it's going to turn out to be. But the point is that things are suddenly focused more inward, and even the press, as if you listen to NPR or the network news, you can see that there's a different flavor to everything now. I mean, just it's very different, and I would even be so bold as to say that any story that can has a racial tinge to it to kind of help to spur domestic unrest and it, you know, create more class warfare and race warfare or at least tension in this country. And so the focus is inward, and one of the focuses is, of course, an expansion of government and government services to help all the poor people that are being badly hit by this economic downturn. And one of the things that they're doing is focusing on public health. And in public health, as you know, as we're talking in that parlance, to us really is an oxymoron or an Orwellian term, whichever one you want to choose. And the ramping up of people being vaccinated, for people taking psychotropic meds if they are diagnosed with some kind of a mental disorder. These things are ramping up, and it looks like the Obama administration is going to be giving these guys a lot more money with which to expand their bureaucratic efforts and expand and deepen their authority to command people to engage in behaviors that free people shouldn't be forced to engage in. And vaccines is one of them. And what we're experiencing now is, in our office here, is a tremendous explosion in the numbers of people of all different walks of life that are coming on board because they're being forced, in schools, daycares, jobs, higher education, if they're traveling out of the country or coming into the country. I mean, it's kind of fanatical, the militancy with which the bureaucracy is pushing this on people at a time when a lot of people are really beginning to figure it out. As you know, my wife, Ingrid, is the director of Vaccination Liberation and has been since it was refounded by her in 1998. And the numbers of people that are coming on board now is absolutely phenomenal. It's like a zeitgeist almost, that it's dawning on people that these things are very dangerous. And as a result, it seems like the known universe of people who are figuring it out are giving us a call and are wanting some kind of support and direction for the choices they're making.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, now, how was that for a stream of consciousness?
That was great. What a great summary. Thanks for being on the show tonight, Don.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
I'm going to step back just for a second. And
sure.
What popped into my head, and this isn't really talking, or this show isn't really designed to just talk about my research or my writing, but you remember 2 years ago, the first piece that I wrote, I was sounding the alarm about trillions of dollars being stolen. And it did relate to a particular story, Wantagate, that was deemed a hoax. And yet, as recently as this past Saturday or Sunday, the $14 trillion being held in Citibank found its way to Dubai, of all places. And this money's been stolen from the Queen of England, and also a prince in Saudi Arabia. Now, I really feel for the Queen and the prince, but this was deemed a hoax. It was deemed inaccurate. And then people said, trillions of dollars. And you were on, I was on your show when you were hosting a show on RBN, and we were on a couple of other networks at the time. And, of course, you came on my show, and we talked about this in great depth. And now we're figuring out what happened, actually, with the money here, because we have this housing crisis. And we have the bailout, which is nothing but a ruse for stealing more money. Now, this money that's being stolen is what is financing all of this stuff that you're describing, which is why I brought all this up. We've been sounding this alarm for over 2 years, and people said, no, can't be. I recall you telling us that it takes something like 37,100 years to count $1 trillion. Back then, we were talking about $27.5 trillion, and now the figure just in the real estate and the associated derivatives and hedge fund markets is exceeding $667 trillion. So there's plenty of money to finance what we're talking about here. You have brought forth some research of Dr. Andrew Ott. I've heard many interviews he's done. He's been on top of this. Well before the 2008 Olympics, I recall. In fact, you were on the show at that time, and we did sort of an emergency show talking about the potential pandemic. And when they came back from the Olympics, I heard some of the professional basketball players talking about getting their flu shots. So those shots have been given to people, and I don't think they're really worried about them getting the flu. I think these pandemics are being planned, they're being orchestrated, and there's no reason to vaccinate people other than to create fear and to control or to contaminate them and to actually begin spreading pandemics. Do you have any comments to make in that regard?
Well, historically, going all the way back to the first modern, anyway, evidence or experiments in mass vaccinating the public against an allegedly infectious disease was the smallpox pandemics in Great Britain from the 1830s till the 1896 is when they stopped. And what was demonstrated there was that the vaccine was spreading rather than limiting the spread of infectious disease. and worsening it also because of the horrible, icky conditions that people lived in that were receiving it, and just having that toxic material added into their bodies, it just was not helpful and caused an awful lot of death. So from the very beginning, even though most people believe that smallpox vaccination reduced the amount of disease prevalence in Great Britain in the late 1800s, it's nonsense. What was really happening there was the year-round access to better food and refrigeration and getting rid of the open sewers, you know, public sanitation, was behind the fall of the incidence of smallpox in urban areas in late 19th century England. And every single major disease pandemic since that time, whether it's popularly understood that way or not, has been vaccine induced. I think a lot of people remember the swine flu epidemic. That was vaccine induced. Most people accept that because it was a fiasco under the Ford administration that they delivered all these vaccines to 47 million people in a couple weeks' time, and a lot of them started getting very sick and developing Guillain-Barré, and the disease spread all over the place, and it was just this horrible mess. And that was terminated. But even the 1918 Spanish flu, called the Spanish flu, was really started at Fort Riley, Kansas. A bunch of soldiers were shipped out, thrown on a ship in a hold and crowded together, fed crappy food, and then landed in Spain for training exercises and got really ill. And some of them that didn't get ill at the time and some of them that recovered ended up then being deployed all over Europe, and they spread it that way. And mm-hmm. So they vaccinated them all, got them sick, they carried it to Spain, and then they deployed them all over Europe. It was, and so that is, and obviously also, and that's allegedly the worst or most lethal global flu pandemic ever. And I've got the other ones that began, I'm kind of a little fuzzy, 1956 and 1968, I believe, influenza pandemics in this country were also originated at U.S. military installations on U.S. soil.
Well, and then there are quite a few people that came down with polio after getting the polio vaccine, and I suppose we could throw some smallpox epidemics in there, anywhere in the mix.
Oh, yeah, no, the same thing in this country, you bet.
Yeah.
All of them. Every single one of them.
Yes. Now,
and polio actually, and this will be hard for some to believe, but we've got all the data and the science to back it up, is that polio is really malnutrition in the presence of chemical exposure. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When you say malnutrition, when it was really prevalent in this country, it was right about the time people were going off more wholesome foods and foods were becoming processed. Coca-Cola arrived on the scene. All sorts of candies and sugars and things like that entered everybody's diet at a time when they were being sprayed with DDT and all sorts of horrible stuff. And so that is really polio. Polio is not a virus, and you can't catch it from somebody else. And so a vaccination for it to prevent its spread is patently medically illogical and logically absurd.
Yeah. Well, so in terms of studying the history, I mean, you gave us a really good synopsis. What Dr. A. Truat has been coming out with is related to a very close study. In other words, he's paying attention to what's going on many levels. And I'm wondering if you've heard this. This is maybe jumping ahead a bit, but there's this talk of the intention of inducing viruses through computer screens using, let's say, nanotechnology. Have you heard any of that?
Yes, I have. At the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., there's a banana plant that is on display that has been spliced with certain genetics so that they can deliver vaccines through food. So you can eat food and be vaccinated against a disease. And so the delivery systems that are in the works at this time are myriad, and I think that you could say that if there is a way that toxic material and infectious diseases can be delivered into the bodies of humans and animals, and make them stick by making them unhealthy, by creating a contaminated environment. It's being thought of and dreamed up and practiced at this time. And
yeah.
So the diseases, I mean, it does seem a little odd, doesn't it, to say a disease transmitted electronically. However, the pathogenic material, the biological material, if you will, is already in us and it's floating all over the place. Plus, with Morgellons disease, which is a real thing, that is, this thing is not biotic, it's not biologic, it grows and it multiplies and it assembles itself from polymers that are ubiquitous in our environment and in our bodies, and seems to enjoy the radiomagnetic or electromagnetic environment that we exist in today as a support for our wireless conveniences.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things at play here, and it doesn't, what makes sense to me in that model is that through the high definition signal, and just through probably the computer as it is, besides that, coming through satellites, probably particularly if you're hooked up to the internet via satellite, I would imagine it's in particular that signals and radio frequencies can be programmed into the delivery system and then transmitted out your screen, or even perhaps as just radiating from your tower. And that stuff can excite or alert or send messages to nanomaterials that are already inside of our bodies and encourage them to do whatever. I think that moods and even physical actions can also be influenced in humans through such media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think from a metaphysical perspective, what we're talking about here is merely something that will tune into a vibration. In other words, we're set up through the propaganda and the mind control. We're set up through all these toxins that are in our system, injected into food and probably into pharmaceuticals as well, and even the water. And so consuming these things sets up the conditions for us to receive that vibration. So we can probably use a good dose of light to counter that. It's only a dark mind that could even conceive of that. So, you know.
It is something. What is amazing, though, in fact, in the December edition of the Idaho Observer, we ran a 4-page special on the chemtrails issue and bringing it up to date with the Morgellons disease that is prevalent. I think everybody is pretty much feeling it at this time. And
mm-hmm.
The world that was described there is so strange, except that everything all adds up. And one of the things that, I mean, we were so freaked out by the information that Ingrid went and started looking around to find out what, if anything, can be done to combat this. I mean, what can you do to combat something that is completely unknown in the natural order of things, does not adhere to any of the biological laws that we're all living things are subject to, and yet it grows and it multiplies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you deal with that? And what she found was really, really phenomenal. We really expected that we were going to have to throw up our hands in print and say, boy, we're all screwed. There's not much you can do. Just pray. But what she found is that these unnatural things thrive on all of the unnatural energies that we bring on board ourselves. That's including our thoughts because of the world we live in and our stressors and our upsets and even our highs and lows emotionally, but also then the food we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink. And so if we really wanted to be immune from this entire universe, we have to very conscientiously attempt to remove as much of the synthetic influences we bring into our bodies as possible. And if we are just filled with natural energies, good thoughts, which is hard, I suppose, these days, but also eating a lot of raw fruits and vegetables, eating the cleanest, most purified water we can, and minimizing the amount of toxic stuff that we surround ourselves with, we can minimize the damage or create an environment in our bodies that these synthetic things can't exist in. And that was heartening.
Yes. I've had Dr. Qasem Khalil on the show a number of times, and I've been on as a guest on Rick Adams' show, which he has been co-hosting once or twice a week recently on RBN. And he's affiliated with a company that's marketing some products that are the type of natural substances you're talking about. In fact, it's been discovered on many fronts that the oil of oregano, and we're talking about a particular very potent Middle Eastern type of oregano oil, basically will protect your immune system from virtually any kind of attack. It's pretty amazing, some of the natural substances that are out there.
Yeah, so. We have a friend, Ingrid's written on that also in the Outer Observer. Her Back to Basics column is invaluable. I encourage any of your listeners to just go up to our website, and with every month there's a Health Basics series, and that's my wife's column, and about 90% or 95% of the time she's the contributing writer to that. Every now and then we use somebody else's work, but she's covered a lot of these things in the past, and we use oregano oil here. We also have a friend who's a builder. He's a strong man for one thing, but he's 60 some odd years old, and he puts oregano oil under the tongue sublingually at a ratio, by the way, of about 10 to 1, but I suggest people should go 15 or 20 to 1 to start. But just doing that and larger amounts of a pretty good source of vitamin C, and he was checked with a live blood cell analysis here a couple years ago, and his blood is absolutely healthy and clean, and he seldom gets any kind of illness at all. Mm-hmm. And that's quite a testament to the stuff. I advocate it highly as an antimicrobiotic, general tonic to have in your bloodstream at all times. Oregano oil is outstanding. It's pretty hot though, and do it sublingually and, mix it about 10 or 15 or start with 15 to 1 in olive oil.
Yes. I've been taking it for a while, and I can tell you that I'm not getting sick. I see people all over the place getting sick.
Sure.
And there are combinations of herbs that people can take along with, as you described, wholesome foods. It all comes back to actually we're discovering more and more that the vibration of certain foods in the area where you live has everything to do with how well you're able to fight disease and
sure,
regardless of the source. If you're eating certain exotic foods and there's not really these checks and balances of inspection when they come into the country and that going on, many times those foods are contaminated. It doesn't matter if they're healthy for you when they're in pristine condition. When they come here and they're already in the rotting stage and or carrying disease, molds and whatever other critters are on them, you become susceptible to that. You're better off eating something grown in your area by a local farmer, going to a local farm market or if you are smart enough, grow it yourself.
Well, you know, that you hit on a couple of really important points here that are really significant. One is that everywhere in the world God put people, he also gave them the plants to keep them well. Every single place. You don't have to drink noni juice from Hawaii to be healthy in Pennsylvania. It's silly. It's all there. And everybody that is living in an area has somebody in their area who is an herbalist. Mm-hmm. And usually you can find them through the health food store. Just say, who's the herbalist in the area? And they'll tell you. And those are the people you ought to get with. Because, no, all the herbs in the area that accomplish all of the things that you need, and the same thing is here. You can grow oregano here. It maybe isn't native, but you can grow it in your own yard, and you can tincture it yourself. It's harder to make an oil without proper equipment, but you can tincture it yourself, and it's powerful medicine. And so if you can grab plants that are medicinal from your immediate area, and they are there, by the way, unless you live in an inner city, but in a rural area, in any area, the plants that are, will keep you well are there, I promise you. And if you take it upon yourself to go out there at the proper time of year to anticipate the medicines you might need, and then you go out and you pick them and you prepare them, and then you process them into a tincture or you dry them or whatever, that stuff works extremely well for you.
Mm-hmm.
We do that here. There's several different things that we pick in season, and whenever we need them, which isn't all that often, when they're there, they work so phenomenally well. Everybody that does that is completely amazed at how well it works. And mm-hmm. it's the energies of you that are infused through the whole project that gets stored in that bottle. And when you need it, it's there for you. It's quite phenomenal.
Yes. If we can add one more food item to the list, and it's really a variety of plants that produce sprouts. Sprouts yeah. are extremely healthy for you. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that a sprout is teeming with life. You know, the plant is basically surging to grow at that right. moment. And so there's a lot of nutrients that are later on more difficult to extract from the plant. You have to take it from the leaves, or you have to take it from the oils that can be pressed out of the stems or the roots. And sprouts are sort of all of that. You know, it's the whole plant. And I'm not a biologist or a nutritionist in that sense, but I know eating sprouts is healthy for you, and they're easy to grow, extremely easy to grow. One could grow those in their home during bad weather even.
Yeah, things sprout. They may need more sunlight to leaf and to grow and go through an entire cycle, but sprouts grow, and the Roman army, the legend has it, is those guys just carried grain with them, and for periods of time when they were way out beyond logistical support for thousands of men, just handfuls of sprouted grain is what kept them going and alive. And even Ingrid, when she was in college, she had a friend that and her that hit on when they were cramming for tests and finals and things like that, when they had a heavy scholastic workload. Some people, you know, drink a bunch of coffee or something, but they made unbaked sprouted bread. And it's, I think it's called a manna loaf, but it's just sprouted grains, and then you put it in the oven at 150 degrees or something like that for a period of time. I don't know all the details. But then they would eat that stuff while they were studying, and the amount of energy and cognitive function boost that they experienced was absolutely phenomenal.
Mm. Okay, well, now we've got all the cures down. So, or I don't know if they're cures.
Oh, no, we have one more.
Well,
there's one more
here
that's going to really freak
yeah.
people out. This
yeah.
this is going to amaze you, and it's something that is, there's some things that are more difficult to bring up than others, and this is on like in the top 10 probably. Mm-hmm. But the concept is called urine therapy. We did a piece on it last month in the paper because I received a phone call from one of my prisoner pen pals, and he does call every now and then. There's five or six of these guys that I'm associated with that do call me every now and then, and I want them to. But he doesn't call me unless there's something important. And he called me up to tell me that in the prison he's at in Lisbon, Ohio, federal pen, MRSA, which is the antibiotic-resistant staph infection stuff is rampant in the prisons, and it's getting worse all the time, not just in his, but in other ones as well. And so prisoners have a very severe disadvantage when they get ill, in that the water they drink is contaminated and the food that they eat is denatured, processed crap that doesn't have any nutritional value whatsoever. And so their immune function is compromised, their resources to fight infection are compromised, and then the stress, of course, they live under being in those environs doesn't help. So MRSA, this bacteriologically resistant staph infection stuff, flesh-eating bacteria, if you will, develops on guys and they get these sores and they can't do anything about it. The only thing the prison offers, and I think they even actually have to buy the ointment, is this triple antibiotic ointment, and they put it on and it actually makes it worse. So here these guys are, they're suffering. If they go and get treatment for it, it makes it worse. If they don't do anything, it spreads, and it's highly contagious to other people and other parts of their body. I mean, it's an absolute miserable catch-22 that is torture. So this friend of mine was getting MRSA. This guy said, you know, if you just put urine on it, it'll be gone in 3 days. He said, well, now get out of here. But he did it. I mean, he's desperate. What else can you do? And sure enough, just by applying with his finger urine on the sores, you know, every time he took a leak, he was able to, the sores disappeared. And there's a myriad, when you get into that subject matter, there's people that drink urine, and there's a therapy for that and everything. And that's not necessarily something I'm into. However, what happens is that wherever you are, if you need to get well, either through scrapes and abrasions or you have an illness to cure, it turns out that urine is your homeopathic remedy, and it's with you always. And it's the dangest thing, but in a pinch, and even the quality of the urine, I'm sure there are some conditions that you could be in if you're a really intense alcoholic or you've got really bad syphilis, or you know, there's probably some extreme conditions where it wouldn't be helpful to you. But the work that's been done over the centuries indicates that anybody's urine is their own homeopathic, and it's available to them 24/7.
Well, I wonder about a urinary infection, if that's safe. But
well, I know, I think I'm going to probably have to do a little bit more work in that area, but it would be the same work that anybody should do if they are, if they're planning on going into any alternative modality or even allopathic modality. But you know what, Don? I bet that it would be under urinary infection conditions, understanding that this works as a homeopathic. And even in a very real sense, everything, even the oregano oil, would be a homeopathic. The sprouts would be a homeopathic, because what we're dealing with is energies here. We're not actually eating food. What we're doing is bringing on energies, vibrations, frequencies that are healing, or frequencies that are destroying, or the opposite of healing. And if in a homeopathic is something that is, the energy traces are there, but they're not just this huge, potent, flavorful, you know, thing. It's it's the energy is going in, and similars working themselves out in that energy level. And so if you view urine in this capacity as a homeopathic, I would bet that you would be able to get the answer back out, that the ideal remedy for a urinary tract infection would be your own perfect medicine.
Well, that's interesting. Now, I think I'll stick to oil of oregano for the time being.
Hey, you know, I only brought it up because we are entering times that a lot of things that we're used to may not be available to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to know the tools we have at our immediate disposal. I mean, how handy will it be for your listeners if at some point in time from now, they don't have access to anything at all, and they've got severe scrapes and abrasions or something, and they're concerned about infection, urine will take care of it. All they have to do is apply urine to it, and it keeps things disinfected, and it also has a myriad of trace elements and minerals that expedite the healing process. So now that they've got something to help themselves at a later time when there's nothing else at their disposal, but they have that.
We learn something every day, don't we?
Yes, we sure do. But what prompted us to even do anything on that was that these guys suffering in prison with no internal resources, no external recourses, were able to ameliorate a real problem by simply, pissing on it.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope they don't get stung by a bee, considering the lack of mud inside a prison.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it there.
Sure. Yeah, we can go on. We don't have to spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about urine therapy, I promise. I won't even bring up urine therapy again for the rest of the show, Don.
Okay. All right. We wouldn't want to piss anybody off, would we?
No, let's not piss anybody off.
Okay, coming back to more serious matters now, what is the status of these school programs? I know the last time Ingrid was on, she was talking about this couple, I think it was either in Maryland or New Jersey or possibly both, that was in court fighting over the custody of their children because they didn't want their children to get vaccinated at school. This is the place, by the way, when I was a kid, where a nurse got in trouble for giving aspirin, or maybe it was a teacher got in trouble for giving aspirin to one of the kids in the school, I think because the nurse was unavailable. And this kid had a horrible headache. And teacher got in a lot of trouble for ordinary baby aspirin. Now they're talking about injecting these vaccinations. What type of vaccines beyond the what's the one they're giving the young girls for
Gardasil.
Example? Yeah, Gardasil.
The HPV vaccine.
Are they doing that in the schools now, or are they forcing compliance through doctors, or where is that case?
Well, there's a variety of mechanisms whereby Gardasil is being forced on young girls, and they're are some states, I think, that are requiring it, but I believe there's a lot more laws on the books than there is compliance at this time. There's a lot of people who just comply because the doctor says or the school says, well, you have to have this thing to go to school here, and the parents just go, okay, and they just do it. And what's happening, though, is that particular vaccine is lethal. In a much higher incidence, and it's also causing tremendous waves of sick girls immediately and also kind of delayed reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And so while there's a lot of laws on the books pretty much mandating it, they're not enforcing it as much as they're trying to, coerce compliance. And in all honesty, I haven't heard anything pop up on my radar screen that's huge at this time on that subject, except it is one of the factors that's contributing powerfully to the scenario that I played out in the early part of the show, where people are just awakening to the dangers of vaccines in droves. I'm really feeling as if the wave is such that it's a zeitgeist, and that in a very short period of time, I can't really predict that, but in a very short period of time, the gig's going to be up, everybody's going to know the vaccines are dangerous, and that they're behind autism and chronic illnesses and just, all sorts of horrible things that are going wrong in the bodies of Americans and people worldwide, and they're not going to do it. And so the industry, and when I say the industry, that's the manufacturers, the physicians, the social workers, everybody is going to have to force it on people or they're going to have to give it up and go to something else. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I believe that probably has an awful lot to do with how much longer this embattled country and society is going to be around.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the prime factor for people waking up? I mean, we talk about these things sometimes on a regular basis. It depends on how much news there is out there. I know back the last time Ingrid was on the show, we talked about this through a good portion of the show. And I was hearing things for a few weeks, and it sort of died down for a while. What is causing people to wake up? Is it the Idaho Observer, or is it people like Dr. Truott, maybe Dr. Rebecca Carley, who's been putting this message out, Bill Deagle, or is it just the fact that they're having to confront this now?
Well,
say, for
all
example,
of the above. Ingrid's mother, Wallene James, wrote the book Immunization, the Reality Behind the Myth, and it was released initially in 1986. She was almost a decade ahead of the curve, but the book is foundational. It's beautifully and marvelously written, flawlessly also referenced and cited, and it gives people an understanding of the myth behind it, how it evolved, and what really is going on. It's the difference between the disease theory of germs, which is what we believe in, versus the germ theory of disease, which is the foundation of vaccinology and in general modern medical practice these days. And so from that foundation, a bunch of people came on board at that time and went, oh my. And then they started reading the stuff that came even 100 years before them, and they were learning, growing, amassing a network, just biding their time. And then sure enough, as predicted, almost as if on cue, the numbers of injuries that were being attributed to vaccines, inescapably being attributed to vaccines, began increasing dramatically. The Western medical scientists, the gurus of modern medicine, the high priests of death is kind of more accurate, they kept approving more and more vaccines for more and more illnesses, and the recommended vaccine regimen is just huge. I mean, the numbers of antigens that kids are receiving before the age of five doesn't even compare to the few that we got that caused some damage. And so as it's all steamrolling forward now, there's very few people who aren't touched by vaccine damage, and they know it, and they talk about it amongst friends and family. And so it's just this thing that's been building, and suddenly it's just, you know how sometimes a thing will just accumulate so much energy and weight behind it that it just goes forward of its own inertia, and there's nothing that can stop it. And I believe that we're at that point now. There's no doubt in my mind that the numbers of people awakening to vaccines because it's touching them in their lives, either from a real damage or because they're having these things forced into them almost at gunpoint or both, is what is doing it. And so we'll just have to see how, well, we know how Obama's responded. He's given $1.5 billion to the CDC to develop more vaccines and push more vaccine requirements on people.
Mm-hmm. And that's so, the same organization that denies that Morgellons exists or denies that there's a cure for cancer and,
right,
and many other diseases.
Yep.
So we see.
Yeah, exactly. No, if we thought that Obama was going to be a benevolent president and he was going to change things around, all that's happened is the energy is being focused more domestically now. And
mm-hmm.
Boy, people are going to be really well taken care of. They're just going to have all the things that, all the policies that are failing them now and have been failing them for decades are going to be given a whole bunch more money.
Mm-hmm. I want to share something with you and the listening audience, and I think you'll find this interesting. Through my genealogical research, which led me down the path of discovering financial corruption in the real estate markets, in terms of organized criminal elements working in conjunction with or under the guise of government rating public funding of schools and foundations and publicly owned lands and public projects related to the EPA or related to basically any cash cow that a local, county, state, or federal government-sponsored program might have. When one looks at the internet companies that are involved in this, and I'm talking about places where people sign up to get on the internet, maybe to sign up for a free mail service or one of these public social networks like classmates.com, reunion.com, Facebook, MySpace, all of these websites are located in buildings where there are large numbers of attorneys of a certain ethnic background, and medical clinics and psychologists and finance companies, mortgage companies, and even some brokerage firms. I see this over and over again. Now, some of these are actually owning hospitals or clinics or medical facilities of some sort. So you can see a concerted effort that these people are all working together. And this is basically all over the country. So I'm giving you and the listening audience forewarning that there's going to be a ton of information coming out about this, because this is not by accident that this is occurring. And I say a certain ethnic background, you can use your imagination and imagine what ethnicity I'm talking about. Or pretend ethnicity might be a better way to describe it.
Well, did you, after I mentioned it to you on the phone the other day, did you go and check out the Hulu commercial that played 6 times during the Super Bowl the Sunday before last?
I did.
Now, are you talking about them or the lizards?
Well, actually, as you could say, I'm talking about both.
Okay. Wasn't that something? I urge all your listeners, if you don't know what I'm talking about, go just, you can Google for YouTube, Alec Baldwin Super Bowl Hulu commercial. That'll do it. Alec Baldwin Hulu will probably do it. And that's H-U-L-U. And what you will get is the most stunning thing that I believe that I have ever seen on television or a computer, as far as, I guess, a blatant admission that to certain people speaking to us in code, I'm assuming, the war's over and they won. Was that kind of the essence of the message you got out of that?
Well, that's what they're saying, but...
yeah, I don't believe it, but...
Yeah,
it,
not
it
right.
It was just something.
Yeah. Now, a gross miscalculation on their part.
I would have to agree. But it opens by saying that, oh, people, they say that television rots your brain. No, it doesn't. It just softens it like a ripe banana. We're going to take it all the way and turn your brains into the consistency of cottage cheese and scoop it out like a melon baller and eat it. I'm starting to salivate. Why? Because we're aliens. And then the announcer says, we're part of a conspiracy to destroy the world. Enjoy.
Yeah. Now, wow. You have to ask yourself, what is the purpose of that commercial? I mean, if you ask yourself that. Well, it's obvious, you know, how they put everything in front of us, right under our noses, right? One could look at that and laugh and say, ha, 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 or it's actually because this information has been coming out on shows like this and others.
Sure.
People have tackled this topic, and, of course, you're either in one camp or you're in the other. You know, you're totally in denial about everything anyway, so it doesn't matter what we talk about on this show. If you tune in and you're, let's say, not familiar with the topics, it sounds pretty insane, I'll have to admit. But that's what they rely on, is the reaction that people make.
Sure.
To anything that's beyond the matrix, because everything has been so structured for people to accept, or you're an outcast by the rest of society. And that's sort of like being outcast from a beehive or an anthill.
Well, I've informally polled, I would say, 15 different people who saw the Super Bowl, and they're of varying walks of life and levels of understanding. And what I found, and again, this is pretty informal, but I think that this is probably actually fairly representative, is that most people just noticed it like they notice any other commercial and found it to be entertaining or not. I think most people found that one rather entertaining. A lot of people said that, I don't even recall seeing it. It played six times. I was there the whole game. And then a couple people, and this was the minority, said, you know, yeah, now that you mention it, I do kind of remember that. So I'm not sure quite what that means, but the people that have a conspiracy knowledge, a few of them saw it, and God for what it was, most of them in the bigger body of people kind of maybe remember, but the vast majority, I would say, of the 15 people, I bet about 10 of them were just amused by the commercial like they would be any other commercial,
mm-hmm.
or not. So that's, yeah. That was just kind of fascinating.
Well, now we have this federal push, and it's there was so much dissension by the average American out there, despite what the media tells us, to get high-definition television by February 17th, and that's been pushed up to the month of June, I understand. So,
is that true?
Yeah, the federal government is really interested in the quality of your TV viewing these days. So,
yes,
to me, that just sounds off alarms and red flags all over the place. I mean, why would they care now, after all these years? Why would they care that all Americans have these little digital boxes in their house for $40?
Well, it's funny that you should mention that. In last month's edition of the paper, we did two pages on the subject matter. One of the pages was a story about the origins of the congressional bill. It was buried in the Digital Transition and Public Safety Act. And what most people don't realize is that that bill was signed by President Bush on January 8th, 2008, and it was Title II of the, you're going to love this, he obviously has done marvels on this act, the Deficit Reduction Act of 2007. So I don't think deficit reduction is exactly what occurred during that period of time, but Title II of this was the Digital Transition and Public Safety Act. What this really is the silent sound spread spectrum, which is what it sounds like, silent sound, can be broadcast over the band of frequencies that the analog system utilizes at this time, but it comes out as static. If they move the entire television industry to a different frequency under the guise of moving to digital, which is not necessary, by the way, what they can do in the new set of frequencies is broadcast the silent sound spectrum invisibly, and you can't hear it silently, obviously. So that's the purpose. The other purpose is the band of frequencies that the analog television industry has been broadcasting on all this time went up for auction beginning the 24th of January of last year, and it netted $19.5 or so billion dollars by major corporations bought it up, and they intend, it was in five different blocks, so five different entities that are major corporate entities, AT&T, I think it's Google, and one more, I can't think of it, picked up the other five, or four of them, and they botched the sale of Block D intentionally, because sewn into the act that President Bush signed was that certain frequencies would be picked up by the federal government to broadcast its public safety network, or public security network, or I'm forgetting the name right now. But they botched the auction on purpose so that the government could then suck up what is about a fifth of the frequencies that were available to the analog broadcast industry, and the other ones were bought up by these other mega corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So, in essence, what happened was we have now the ability to have broadcast to us silent sounds that can influence our behavior and accomplish a lot of other things, believe me. And the analog system went to the government so that it could occupy them for its own purposes. The whole thing was a big, huge presto switcho shell game thing, and out of it people are going to be, if they're watching TV or watching television through their computer through Hulu, they have just witnessed those mediums turning from passive social conditioning tools to real-time online mind control apparatus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dr. Truat talked about the war in Iraq when they got the 100,000 or so Republican Guard units that belonged to Saddam Hussein's elite forces to surrender and actually cry like babies, kissing the feet of their captors. And we're not told all the stories through the mainstream, but many of those people, it's surfaced that they were shot. And I was asked by somebody what I thought the message was that they put in their heads. And I said, climb out of your foxholes, lay down your weapons, hold your hands in the air, and we'll give each of you your own 7-Eleven franchise in the United States. And
it's probably not too far from that.
Yeah, I can't imagine, but maybe that's what it was.
Well, put it this way: those frequencies, those sounds. What happened was we destroyed, or the coalition forces destroyed Saddam Hussein's military communications network. So it commandeered the FM frequency band and was doing his command and control communications through FM. And the U.S. then used its very sophisticated dog whistles and broadcast these silent sounds. And if you have thoughts being beamed into your head that you can't control, such as you're worthless, we're going to kill you, you better give up now, or we're going to whatever. And if these signals were beamed into your head for hours and hours and hours on end, at what point would you be begging for it to stop? And that's what happened. Remember, we were preparing for this massive, massive ground assault from Kuwait to go on up north and take over Baghdad. And a couple of days into the adventure, the Republican National Guard, Saddam's elite, trial-hardened, martyr-complex soldiers, and they all just threw up their hands and surrendered. And this, I remember at the time, this was kind of way before my conspiracy days, and I just remember thinking at the time, wow, isn't that weird? And then just went on with my life. But now I know that the frequencies that caused all those guys to unexpectedly throw their hands up in the air and surrender, crying and kissing the feet of their captors, is the same technology that is going to be coming through your television set come my birthday, as of February 18th.
Wow, that's coming up pretty soon. We should wish you
a
happy birthday now.
Yeah, I've got a very auspicious date as a birthday this year.
Yeah. Well, actually, now the high def stuff is supposed to come out in June. I guess they extended that because they want to give more people the time to buy the box.
Well, is that true? I mean, I was onto that until the last couple of days, and it was going to be an act of Congress. An act of Congress created the date of February 17th, the transition being on the 18th, and it was going to take an act of Congress to extend that. Did Congress actually do that?
Mm-hmm. That's what I heard.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a week or two. Yeah. So you'll have a happy birthday after all.
Well, we'll see. The HD signals, well, most of the major networks have been coming online with high density or high definition since 1998. So it's already there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can broadcast stuff through FM frequencies in 1990 Gulf War zone, then they can do it in 2009 domestic airwaves zone. So we're not exactly out of the woods. Plus, I just flat don't believe anything that they think, do, or say. So whatever the reason they've done it, one can't think for a moment that the plans to control people's minds or turn them into mush or, you know, whatever the plans are, has been scuttled in any way. Delayed, yeah, perhaps because of technical difficulties, but I think that there are other timetables on that are extant at this time, and I think that people should still be very on guard about their own mind and the sanctity of their own thoughts.
Yeah, well, they've been doing it for the past 75 years at least. So actually, you could go about 95 years when they created the Federal Reserve.
Go back to about the beginning of the Agricultural Revolution, and I think that's probably about when it all began.
Yeah. You know, they could have been playing music, but then, you know, I don't want to dog any musicians. Maybe they were just playing reruns of Fox News. That could do it, you know.
That could do it.
There's
put the whole country in a state of catatonia.
Well, we want to steer people away from that if possible. You know, we tell people it's time to start seriously considering unplugging the boob tube. They don't call it that for nothing. So,
yeah, it doesn't rot your brain. Turns it soft, like a ripe banana.
Yeah.
Just ask Alex Baldwin, TV star.
Yes. Well,
but, you know, we are not making the transition out here. If it turns out that we're going to be relegated to watching old movies and or reading books, so be it. In fact, this marvelous cartoon that I picked up, or that came my way actually, said it was just one panel, and the bubble said the worst possible thing that could happen if your TV doesn't get HD, or your TV isn't HD compliant. And it shows the TV screen in the living room is black, and the family is sitting around reading books. The worst possible thing that could happen. Isn't that the truth? Dad's reading the newspaper, and, you know, Mom and the kids are reading books. Yeah, it's just great.
Yeah. Well, Don, we're out of time. I hate to say that. That's always
It's been an enjoyable hour or so.
That's the pitfall of having a radio show. It has to end.
Yeah.
But I want to give you the opportunity to pitch the newspaper, and we know people can go to Republic, I almost said, Idaho Observer, idaho-observer.com, or idaho-observer.com,
right,
and look at some of these things that you're talking about from the back issues about the vaccination liberation organization, as well as many other articles that you keep there, or they can subscribe to the paper. And you want to give them those instructions?
Well, sure. You can do it through the website. We have a small store, I guess you could call it, online, that's got our publications and a couple of other items that we find to be excellent in informing people about what's going on. And then you can also write to us, or it'd probably be easier just for your listeners to give us a call at 208-255-2307. That's 208. The whole state of Idaho is still 208, 255-2307. And we're $25 a year. We're actually thinking about going to having only a first-class sub because the bulk rate mail in this country is becoming very sketchy in its ability to be delivered promptly and at all. Just like everything else in this country, I think the Postal Service is struggling under the burden of chemtrails and Morgellons like the rest of us. But you can check us out online. You can subscribe online if you'd like. And you can also just give us a call at the number I just gave you.
Yes, and your January 22nd issue arrived in my mailbox yesterday.
Oh, geez.
So that's a testament to the fact that...
That's a testament to what I was just talking about, that's right.
They talk about snail mail.
well, yeah, maybe they're getting a complex about us web users calling it snail mail, and so it's just their way of extending a middle finger, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. There's also a link on several pages of my website, directlightproductions.com. So if you're reading something that was published in the Observer on my website, the link is there. Also on the links page, it says the Idaho Observer. Just click on that, and it'll take you right to the Idaho Observer. Don, thank you very much for coming on the show. I look forward to your next visit. Maybe we can get Ingrid to join us next time.
Yeah, we'll see if we can rope that gal in next time.
Okay, and you take care. Give her my best, and you have a happy birthday as well.
Hey, well, thank you very much, and we'll do. I'll be 46 on the 18th.
Oh, my goodness.
I never thought I was going to live past 30.
Still a babe.
Still a babe, I know. I'm still always the youngest guy in the crowd. I guess that kind of is indicative of the old farts that I travel with.
Now, be careful with that urine, okay? Don't go passing it around too much, all right?
No, it's your own perfect medicine. It's not necessarily anybody else's.
All right. You have
a
good one.
Have a good evening, and thanks a lot, Seth. You're a master on the board, and we'll talk to you guys again another time.
All right. Take care, Don. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Don Harkins. Please visit the Idaho Observer on their website. That's idaho-observer.com, or you can call during regular business hours. They're on the Western time zone, so normal business hours, I guess, are about 9 to 5 their time, and you can call area code 208-255-2307. It's a monthly paper, $25. Covers the whole year. It's definitely worth it. You're going to read a lot of news that you're not going to see anywhere else. And I would like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick for the sound. Yes, Seth, the sound was great tonight. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you all a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Maxwell Green, and I'm the host of ET Yoga. That's